The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
We have entered one of the most bizarre times in my lifetime in America, where your thoughts are now being controlled and mandated by very powerful forces, both government and mobs, that if you don't think correctly, they will come to your home and terrorize you. Let's get right to The Big Lead.
The Big Lead. Top story.
Should have mentioned. Welcome to The Big Show. I'm just so fired up to get into everything today. We're coming to you from the Carter Subaru studio. So we have seen that if you are a liberal, very liberal Seattle council member, but you are not radical, liberal, leftist enough, the mob, the domestic terrorists, will come to your home and try to terrorize you and your family. Last week, I talked yesterday to a Queen Anne resident as a crowd marched through his neighborhood. He went outside to see what it was all about, and they beat him, left him bloody with a concussion, laying in the street. He had to be hospitalized. He shared his story with us yesterday. Because, you see, anybody who doesn't go along with the mob these days, they will do everything they can to silence you. They're certainly trying to do that with me. They are doing that with politicians who are not radical enough. They're doing it to private citizens. And it's thugs on the street who are doing it. It's thuggish politicians who are doing it. And it's corporations that are afraid of the social media mob. So we start today with a classic example. Cliff Mass is a professor of atmospheric science at the University of Washington. He's a frequent guest on this show. He's world-renowned as somebody who comments on climate and climate change and weather. But he also has a blog where he also talks about social issues. And a week ago, or a few days ago, Cliff Mass took a walk around Seattle. And he saw every window boarded up, a used-to-be vibrant business district that has been completely shut down. He talked about the violence of the people who are going to people's homes and terrorizing them, who are smashing shop windows, and he compared them to Nazi brown shirts. He said seeing every window smashed in downtown Seattle reminds him a bit of Kristallnacht, the night of broken glass in Nazi Germany. For daring to share his thoughts, Cliff Mass was immediately fired yesterday by NPR radio station KNKX from his regular commentary. Cliff alerted me to all of this last night, and now he will share his story with you up next in The Big Lead.
The Big Lead, Dory Monson Show exclusive.
And so now the person who wrote that blog post that created quite a firestorm, Cliff Mass, professor of atmospheric science at the University of Washington. He joins us here on the Dory Monson Show. Cliff, it's good to talk to you this afternoon.
Good to talk to you.
Okay, let's go through this. So you went for a walk through downtown Seattle. You saw images that you found horribly distressing. And you even say at the top of your blog that it's a blog about current weather, climate issues, and current events. You've always reserved the right to just comment on things that are going on in our crazy world, right?
Exactly. So, you know, my blog is my tool to talk about weather, but anything else, you know, it's my way of getting public speech, and I enjoy doing it.
So why were you so moved by this walk around Seattle to post? And the headline was Seattle, a city in fear, can be restored. So you not only identified problems, but you had a call to action to get a hold of city council members at the end. Why were you so moved to write this?
Well, I went around Seattle and I was just stunned by how boarded up it was. I mean, it was startling. And in fact, it was more than just boarded up. Some of the stores and businesses looked like they had, you know, gigantic fortresses in front of them. It was amazing. And there was no one there. It was just so depressing. There were some homeless people. But that was about it. And so you had this great American city boarded up, almost peopleless. And it was very disturbing.
Yeah, it is. It's just a ghost town right now in what was a vibrant central business core. Let's talk about the stuff that got you in trouble. You made comparisons, and you've since removed this, and I'll talk about that with you in a couple of minutes here. But you made comparisons with the smashing of the windows, which we've seen on several occasions. There was the first night of rioting where pretty much every window in several block radius was destroyed and smashed and every store looted. Two Saturdays ago, there was another day of rioting where a Starbucks and a couple nights before that, Uncle Ike's up on Capitol Hill. We've seen this random violence, windows being smashed, stores looted. You made a comparison between that and the night of broken windows, Kristallnacht. Tell me why that popped into your head.
Well, so I rotated from this terrible damage to the city and this boarding up of the city and what caused it. And clearly that was due to the violence, that we had a group of thugs that were running around the city, breaking windows, looting stores, hurting policemen and others. And so, I moved on to that. Why did this happen? And so for me, a very important analog is what happened in the 1930s, where you had thugs that were destroying Jewish businesses, marking up Jewish businesses, hassling people, intimidating people. And the general population said nothing, or they said very little. They were afraid. And so for me, there's a real analog to what's happening today, that people are afraid to speak out about what's going on. And on top of that, back in the 1930s, the Nazi government was clearly behind the whole thing, was supportive of it. And here we have a government here in Seattle that is sort of winking an eye at it, while the city council people are basically downplaying the violence, acting like it didn't exist. And so it's important that the population say something, that we say that this is unacceptable. And so that's what that blog was about.
And I would argue our city government is doing much more than winking an eye at it. Jenny Durkin created CHOP. I mean, that was her creation. You have Kshama Sawant. She is the one giving out Jenny Durkin's protected home address, Carmen Best's Snohomish County address. She unlocks City Hall to let these protesters inside a building, which violates the rules of her job. They're doing more than winking an eye at it. We have a government that is creating this, that is enabling this. And that's why I think your analogy, we have at least two council members who are avowed Marxists. So that's why I believe your analogy is at least credible.
Right. So, it seems to me that people have to say something. We can't be afraid any longer. And I've gotten probably over 100 emails during the last day of people saying exactly that, that they're afraid to speak out. And I think that's terrible in a society like our own. It's very scary.
The other analogy that seems to have created the most trouble is you compare, and you didn't say this about all protesters. You said of the violent protesters that they reminded you of the Nazi brown shirts. Tell me that. Tell me about that.
Right. So basically, I was just bringing on the analogy that you had brown shirts during the 30s breaking windows and doing all these terrible deeds. And so, it seemed to me it was a pretty reasonable analog. You had these thugs that were going around harming people. So, that's where that came from.
Okay. And look, I talked on my show yesterday. There was a man on Queen Anne. A protest, so-called peaceful protest, came by his house at midnight a week ago Wednesday. And he went outside simply to record some video and take pictures of this very unusual event in his neighborhood. He was brutally attacked. He was beaten. He was given a concussion. He was left lying and bleeding on the ground. He was taken, had to be taken to the hospital, forced staples in his head. This is a guy who was brutally beaten merely for the act of coming outside of his home in a nice Queen Anne residential neighborhood. These stories get ignored by most in the media. This guy reached out to me, Cliff, because he wanted to share his story and let everyone know that these are not peaceful protests. These are mobs that are mandating thought control. And so that's why, you know, what I'm seeing is so many in the media, for whatever reason, are not willing to at least present a somewhat balanced perspective on everything that's going on here.
That's right. And in fact, I had that problem with the Seattle Times this morning. They had a headline suggesting that I was claiming that I was suggesting that all the protesters are Nazis. And that's not true at all. I was simply saying that the people who were doing violence were acting like the brown shirts. You know, the peaceful protesters are fine. Sure. That is protected speech. But it's the violence. That's what's wrong. And that's what we have to stand up to. And unfortunately, some people who want to defund the Seattle Police Department are not working on the right side of this. I mean, you're not going to have less violence if you have half the police. That's simply not going to happen.
In fact, I knew, yeah, and you're right, the Seattle Times was a horrible mischaracterization of what you had written. I knew you wouldn't get a fair shake in the Seattle Times because I saw two of their reporters yesterday on Twitter goofing on your blog post, you know, saying that you were an example of Godwin's Law, which is, as soon as an online discussion grows longer, the probability of a comparison involving Nazi or Hitler approaches on and on. So, and correct me if I'm wrong, you are a Jewish man, correct?
I am.
I'm guessing you don't throw around Kristallnacht and brown shirts just randomly.
No, and in fact, you know, my Jewish background actually helps motivate me because it was back in the 30s. You know, when Jewish individuals were being savaged and their buildings destroyed, too many people stayed quiet. So during the 30s, that was true, and it happened at other times. So it is really important that we call out people who are doing this kind of thuggish violence, and society has to stop it. So, I mean, so there's actually a direct connection. We can't be silent about this. And too many people today are being silenced about it.
Yes, yes. You did a regular hit on NPR radio station KNKX. They have a post up, KNKX, to stop airing Weather with Cliff Mass effective immediately. They said that we turn to our regular commentators for expertise and points of view on sports, food, and the weather. But a commentator, even on his own independent platform, cannot deliver rhetoric that is offensive and inaccurate. I was going to say remarkable, but we're in the midst of cancel culture. If you, as a Jewish man in Seattle in 2020, if you walk around and you see boarded up windows and you see the violent actors who are smashing those windows, and it brings to your mind a horrible history from the 1930s, they wanted to ensure that you were silenced. You are not allowed on your own personal private blog, Cliff, to just say what popped into your head as you walked around Seattle that day. And that, to me, is the most disturbing part of all. That not your analogies, not the, you know, the social media backlash is what it is, but that an NPR radio station has decided you must be silenced for an honestly arrived at viewpoint.
That's correct. In fact, what is not known is I almost was silenced a few months ago about something completely separate, and that's for the climate activists. You know, the 350.org had a petition that I should be taken off the air because I didn't provide, you know, an extreme enough version of climate change, and I didn't talk about climate change on every show. And they went to some of the, well-off contributors to KNKX, and there was intense pressure to kick me off the station. And it came very close. Finally, the station did an analysis of my science. This is all published. This is all online. And they found that I was perfectly, I was fine. I was accurate. They even had the ombudsman of NPR National look at me, and I was cleared. But, this kind of pressure by the left-leaning activist groups has been very intense, and they've been trying to get me off the station for a while, and they almost succeeded a few months ago.
Well, they've been trying to get me off Cairo for years and years and years as well. No, that's the era in which we live, that anybody who presents a dissenting view must be silenced. What was that conversation like? Did they call you to fire you yesterday?
They called me, and, there was no give and take. It's basically I'm done. And that was the end of it. There was no discussion or anything. There's no offer, so I took the blog off or something like that. It was off. And I've talked to people internally in the radio station. They just basically panicked with it. It was an intense mob on social media that was criticizing them, and they made the decision almost instantly.
Well, and that is the most stupid of reactions, because they try to cancel somebody every single day, and you happen to be the target du jour yesterday. This would have been over and done with and blown over by the end of the weekend, because I know how these things go. I've watched them on, when I'm targeted and hundreds of other people that get targeted. It blows over after about 2 days because they have to move on to the next person that they want to get rid of. And so this reactionary, let's fire him immediately, that's about as stupid as a radio management can get.
Right. Well, they wanted to get the pressure off right away. And so, I mean, they didn't even talk it out with me, which I really found disturbing. I mean, I would have talked to them about, compromises, taking out the words that people didn't like or something like that, or giving me a chance to explain, where I was coming from in the blog. But that, that didn't work at all.
You have since, last thing for you, you have since removed the references to Kristallnacht and brown shirts in the updated version of the blog. Why?
Well, the way I look at it, it was a distraction, okay? I mean, that was only a small part of the blog, and I want people to think about the rest of the blog. And so some people were using that as an excuse. Well, I took away the excuse. Let them read the full the blog without those sections in. I mean, most of the material's still there. And so I figured it was just a distraction. Let's just take it out.
I thought it was powerful. And again, if that's what your walk conjured up in your mind, I thought it was very powerful. Well, Cliff, I'm sorry that the cancel culture has gotten you. You know how I feel. You're an important voice, both on issues of weather, atmospheric science, all of your expertise, and issues like this. I think we need more people who are willing to dissent from the mob and from the government mandated thought that is being imposed on all of us.
By the way, one thing I should mention is my blog is still there. So my main tool for communication is my blog. And so that's still there undiminished. And I will continue to talk on that. And I may even put a Friday weather forecast on there as well.
Okay, got it. And that is cliffmass.blogspot.com. Cliff, sorry this happened to you. I really am. We're living in some shameful times right now. But I appreciate you sharing your story with me and my listeners.
Yeah. Thanks so much, Stuart.
Okay. Cliff Mass, professor of atmospheric science at the University of Washington. Again, you can check out his blog post at cliffmass.blogspot.com. That is your big lead for today.
The big lead on Cairo Radio.
Good. Check the news for you. And then, are you ready for every road, every inch of every road in this state to be turned into a toll road? It's going to have massive implications on your life. Exclusive details coming up next on The Dory Monson Show. Well, for years and years, I've been telling you about the plan to turn every single road in the state into a toll road. It's going to start with what they call a road usage charge, where they will just track how many miles you drive. And now it has seemingly taken another step toward fruition. I think this would be disastrous for taxpayers, but they are moving ahead. The Washington Policy Center has, through a public disclosure request, gotten documents from the governor's office that show how this plan is moving forward. And Mariah Frost at Washington Policy Center joins us here on the Dory Monson Show. She's the one who uncovered these documents. Great to talk with you. Thanks for coming on with me today.
Thank you for having me, Dory.
Okay, so you tipped me off as to what you had obtained last night. Tell me and my listeners, what are the most interesting points in this governor's paper that you got?
Sure. So in preparing for the 2021 transportation budget that's looming ahead in the upcoming legislative session, the governor's office staff laid out several revenue options that they might consider in the governor's transportation budget proposal. One of those revenue options is a road usage charge. But what was so interesting about the line on the road usage charge is in parentheses that they said that this has been proposed as a replacement for the gas tax, but they could consider a replacement plus new revenue. And that was kind of a red flag for me. So I emailed the staffer who wrote this document, the senior policy advisor, and they refused to give me a clear answer on what that meant. They simply said the document that you are referencing is a deliberative internal staff document that lists ideas which have not been vetted, furthered, or advanced. In other words, I don't want to talk to you about this.
Yeah, well, and it's, I mean, it is right there in print, as you've posted on your website, road usage charge could consider replacement plus new revenue. So replacing the gas tax and taxing us on something completely different? Is that what they mean when they say replacement and new revenue?
Well, since the staffer refused to give me an answer, we're kind of left to speculate. And I think it could mean maybe one of two things. It could mean the governor's office would like a road usage charge to supplement the gas tax until the gas tax is retired, because right now our gas tax is bonded out for 30 years, and so it can't be taken off the books for quite some time. So maybe they're saying, oh, we'll put in a road usage charge, and it'll supplement gas tax revenue, the new revenue. And then when the gas tax is retired, then it can be, you know, fully replaced. I don't think that's what it means, because they would lose substantial revenue because they'd be double taxing us for 30 years.
Yes.
The other alternative is it could mean that a gas tax is replaced with a much more expensive mileage tax that's not revenue neutral to what we're paying right now. And that's probably what it means. Neither of these things are good.
Right.
And certainly neither of these things are in line with what the Washington State Transportation Commission has recommended. And that's kind of what concerns me.
Well, and the possibility that comes to my mind, because my sources have been telling me for years that this is coming, is that if they succeed in their plan, or I like to call it an evil plot, but if they succeed with their plan to get a transponder in every one of our vehicles, and they know where we're driving and when we're driving, that they will take this road usage charge, which is supposedly a per mile charge, and they will turn it into making every road a toll road. So if you want to go to the grocery store, it'll be 25 cents. If you want to go into downtown Seattle, it'll be $25. And that is yet another way that, as I was looking through what you had printed, that was another possibility that came to my mind.
And that's not outside the realm of possibility. As you and I talked last month, the Washington State Department of Transportation secretary commented that he would like a road usage charge to include congestion pricing, which is exactly that, where you're paying a different rate based on when you travel, where you're traveling, and he also noted, you know, the purpose of your trip. So what's amazing to me about all of this is that you've got the Washington State Transportation Commission putting out pretty decent recommendations, you know, that this should be protected for highway purposes, you know, that we need to really look at privacy. But then you've got the governor's office and the State Department of Transportation secretary who have very, very different ideas about what this should look like, which is exactly what we predicted back in 2017 and 18 when we said, look, this might be a good idea in theory, but when politics get involved, everybody's going to want to get their hands on this and try to leverage it one way or another. And that's exactly what we're seeing happening now.
You know, I had forgotten until you just reminded me when we talked last about the Secretary of Transportation saying that they might vary the toll based on the purpose of your trip. And that was so bizarre to me. And I know you and I talked about just how unusual that was. But just the idea that somebody in government would somehow determine the merits of any trip we take and maybe charge us accordingly. That was just another example of the kind of language they are using that really makes me fearful of how they're trying to control and manipulate and socially engineer our behavior. And in this case, our movement in a free society.
Well, it's fundamentally elitist. And what's amazing about both of these findings is the secretary made that comment at a meeting. It wasn't, you know, a formal statement of the Department of Transportation. He just made a comment. He probably didn't think it through and was a little too honest. And similarly here, what I've found from the governor's office is a document that was never intended to be viewed by anybody but staff. And I got it through public disclosure. So these are the discussions that they're having internally or are thinking about them. And so, despite what the State Transportation Commission has, you know, recommended and researched and all the work that they've put into this, there are a lot of very powerful political players who really see the road usage charge as a moneymaker and as something that will allow them to socially engineer us into the kind of life and that they think is moral.
Yeah. No, they hate single occupancy vehicles, even though that is an absolute necessity for most family people's lives who are active in their community as well. They hate that. They want to tax us out of our cars. They want to get us onto buses and trains that are, I mean, I've heard from a Metro driver this week who said that he thinks it's just a rolling Petri dish, the buses. And so, yeah, they want to manipulate our behavior by making it too expensive for us to live life normally. But what it does is it hurts the people they talk about wanting to help the most. The people who will be manipulated by government the most easily are the people who can't afford to pay these taxes. So it's the poor and the working class who will be under the thumb of government, and everybody else, the, you know, the people who have more means, they're going to be able to continue to live somewhat normal lives.
Well, that's what's so frustrating about all of this is they talk so much about valuing, you know, equity and making sure that we have a multimodal system that's really fair and serves everybody. But the people who are hurt most when they're not provided the kind of mobility that they pay for are people who are, you know, working families who live out in Linwood and pay the highest tolls out of anybody on 405, or the people who can't afford to live in Seattle and Bellevue and have to commute 2 hours every day, who have no choice because the only place they can afford to live is out in, you know, Thurston County or Lewis County or wherever. It's very, very difficult. And so I think the State Department of Transportation and all transportation officials really need to kind of reevaluate their ideas of equity.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, look, it is so important that you're out there getting these documents, exposing what is going on behind the scenes, because I have said that tolling every road would be one of the great professional fights of my life, because I know how this will just be crushing, and it will manipulate government, will manipulate our human ability to move freely like never before. And that's something we should not stand for. So thank you, as always, for getting documents like this and for bringing it to our attention.
Thanks, Tori.
Appreciate it. Maria Frost, she is the director of the Cole Center for Transportation at the Washington Policy Center. I'd love to hear your thoughts. You ready for some toll roads on every single road? Text me at 98973. That's 98973. And we have lots more straight ahead here on the Dory Monson Show. Our politicians' vision of what they want Seattle to become is coming true. And it's not just Seattle, as we've been talking about. As the violent mobs have gone to Snohomish County, there was lots of problems down in Longview that we told you about a few days ago, Olympia, Bellingham, all around the region. We are seeing an increase in crime and violence. Now, they say the official crime stats, the numbers are down, and that's because cops aren't even getting called on a lot of these things because they can't respond. A good friend of mine, his high school-aged daughter, was harassed outside of their home just a couple of nights ago in West Seattle. She was literally afraid to get out of her car because of two street transients who were catcalling her. So she called in and she said she was going to go to a friend's house, and dad called the police. So that was at 6:30. Police showed up at 9:30, very apologetic. But people don't even call the cops anymore on most of the crimes that are happening. But at Channel 4, ComoNews.com, they detailed that we've now had in Seattle six violent random attacks in the last 3 days.
Between July 31st and August 2nd, the King County Prosecutor's Office reports six random assaults, and charges have now been filed in all of them. In Pioneer Square, a man was arrested for pointing a painted BB gun at people, threatening to kill them. There were also attacks at a bus stop along 3rd and at an apartment building where a man barged inside. The prosecutor's office vowing to pursue each one.
You know, we don't want people to think that we get assault reports and then turn a blind eye to them. These are very serious cases.
That's Casey McNerthany with the prosecutor's office there. Good guy, great guy. So six violent random attacks. One of them was the 20-year-old kid just going to his job at QFC at 7 o'clock on Saturday morning, when a homeless man just brutally beat him and sent him to the hospital. An attack so violent, the homeless man attacker broke both of his wrists as he was raining blows on the young man and on two Good Samaritans who tried to jump in and likely did save his life. So one thing that's interesting, we have more people deciding that they are going to be armed because of all the violence, because of all the things that are happening at people's homes. Do you realize you can't get your concealed carry permit right now? Because they say fingerprinting you would be too close a proximity for the fingerprinter, which is usually a cop. At least it was when I got mine done. So they have suspended giving you the gun licenses right now. But my wife can go to the salon and get a pedicure? What kind of upside down world is this when my wife can get a pedicure, but my listeners who want a gun permit can't get fingerprinted? Oh, the plot thickens. And the Fastest 15 is coming up next.